Beijing continues to defy Manila's demand for its ships to leave Philippine waters. A new COVID-19 variant, said to be undetectable, even with a gold standard in testing, emerges in France. Party list group Bayan Muna hits government for the slow pace of its pandemic cash aid distribution. We'll talk to the spokesperson of the Social Welfare Department for their side of this issue. And the World Health Organization urges nations to stop the sale of live mammals in markets to prevent the spread of more infectious diseases. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. We begin with China's defiance to remove its ships in Philippine waters. Manila's top diplomat poised to file another diplomatic protest against Beijing due to the presence of over 200 Chinese vessels in the West Philippine Sea. Our correspondent Shara Zambrano now joins us with details. Shara, good morning. Go ahead.
Yeah, Carmina, late last night, the National Task Force for the West Philippine Sea issued another strong statement and a very detailed description of just how much the Chinese vessels of different kinds have been swarming the West Philippine Sea. In the statement, it says it denounces the continuous swarming of at least 240 Chinese vessels in different parts of the exclusive economic zone of the Philippines and the extended continental shelf. They gave a rundown of just how many ships are there. They're very categorical in saying that these are Chinese militia ships. There are 136 Chinese militia ships spotted in Gavin Reef, 9 in Whitsun or Julian Felipe Reef, 65 in Mackinnon or Chigwa Reef, 6 on Mischief Reef, 3 in Subi Reef, 4 around Pag-asa Island, 1 in Likas Island, 5 in Kota, and 11 different kinds of Chinese vessels in Ayumin Shoal. The National Task Force describes these vessels as being 60 meters in length and has the capability to catch 1 ton of fish per day. So if these vessels were indeed catching fish or fishing out there, the National Task Force computes that they would have been able to gather or harvest 240,000 kilos of fish every single day that they remain there. They also reported that in Pag-asa Island, there are vessels that, again, are still harvesting giant clams illegally. And there are also 2 China Coast Guard vessels still in the vicinity of Pag-asa Island. In Mischief Reef, the 2 Hubei missile craft that pursued our vessel just a couple of days ago have also still been spotted there. In Fiery Cross Reef, there's 1 corvette that is a warship. In Subi Reef, there is 1 tugboat, and in the other part of the West Philippine Sea, Scarborough Shoal, there are also 2 Chinese Navy vessels, 3 China Coast Guard vessels, and 10 Chinese militia vessels in that area. The National Task Force says it views also with serious alarm the encounter of that the ABS-CBN crew experienced with the Filipino vessel that they were on, which has been reported. We have reported that it had pursued our Filipino vessel as it was making its way towards Ayumin Shoal, and also pursued us a good hour and a half as it was clearly making its way home to mainland Palawan. The National Task Force says that the incident is now under investigation. The task force says that this is prejudicial both to the peace and security of the region and also in the ability and the right of the Filipinos to fish or exploit the resources in the exclusive economic zone, which should be their right alone. The National Task Force reiterates its demand for China to withdraw all of its vessels from the municipality of Kalayaan and the exclusive economic zone, and a reminder for China to take these representations seriously. Carmina.
All right, Shara, we're going to talk about the National Task Force in a moment, but I want to focus now on the response that's been given by the Foreign Department. I want to read to you the tweet that Teddy Loxton Jr. Sent out about 4 hours ago. He said at that time that he hasn't heard anything from the National Task Force in the West Philippine Sea, but that he'll take the word of ABS-CBN News for it. He's now changing his policy of acting only on NTF requests, and that he was going to fire a diplomatic protest that happened about 4 hours ago. That tweet was sent about 4 hours ago. But Shara, let's be clear about this. This is not how the Foreign Secretary initially reacted to the incident. Instead of calling you, as you are, a truth seeker, the Secretary called you and your crew initially as thrill seekers. He branded you as thrill seekers. Tell us about that first, Shara.
Well, it doesn't come as a surprise to me, because this hasn't been the first time that the Foreign Affairs Secretary has spoken ill of Philippine journalists. I do remember as far back as the Marawi siege, Secretary Loxton has already been calling journalists irresponsible thrill seekers that are causing trouble to the Philippine troops that are out there. I was not surprised by it. We have the footage that clearly shows what happened out there. We have GPS coordinates that will confirm where we were. And we've already aired the story this morning about what actually we planned to do out there. Why were we there in the West Philippine Sea? We were there to look for and talk to Filipino fishermen. We were within the exclusive economic zone, and there are some sectors that have been accusing the boat captain of causing alarm for the China Coast Guard because it didn't answer its radio challenge and because it made a sharp turn going back to mainland Palawan. I've never met a Filipino fisherman who knows how to speak English, and to expect them to answer a radio challenge from a larger China Coast Guard vessel in a language that they don't understand, I feel is a lot to expect from them. And I did ask the maritime security experts about this. When you are in the exclusive economic zone, you are free to move and sail as you wish. So effectively, the boat captain could have made, for all we know, figure eights in the exclusive economic zone, and that would not have been wrong. He had every right to be there. He had every right to sail as he wished. That's something that we should always remember, where we were. We were in the exclusive economy.
And Shara, you read a portion of the statement coming from the National Task Force for the West Philippine Sea. And its statement, though, as you said a while ago, it views with serious alarm the incident involving your crew. Have they reached out to you to get more details about the incident? You told us a while ago that the incident is now under investigation. Have they reached out to you, Shara?
I was actually the first one to reach out to them after I got back, or shortly after the incident. While I was still in Palawan, I sought an audience with the Western Command of the AFP to tell them what happened. We showed a few clips of the raw footage that we came home with, and we answered quite a lot of questions that they had. We were there for a good 4 hours answering their questions. And when I got back to Manila, I also sought an audience with the Chief of Staff, General Cirilito Sobihana, to tell our story, because we were transparent with the voyage from the start. And they have been asking questions as to the movement of China and where exactly we were. So there hasn't been a formal request yet for any of the raw footage that we have, but they did say that they would be submitting a request and will be ready and willing to provide whatever information that we have.
In the absence of those formal requests and formal invitations to participate in inquiries regarding the incident, what can you tell us, Shara, about the reaction of government to the incident, to what you and your crew had to deal with to get to the truth, to find out what their fishermen have been going through all this time? Go ahead, Shara.
Honestly, it's ranged from very livid private messages against me to outward expressions of thanks and gratitude to an actual plaque of appreciation from the Philippine military. There is no one reaction from the Philippine government that I've gotten. So it's quite hard to read. There are some sectors that have been gaslighting us, gaslighting the boat captain, effectively saying that it was our fault, that we poked a hornet's nest, so to speak, and that this would not have happened had we not been reckless.
When you say, Shara, livid private messages, these are coming from government officials, and livid in what sense? Like, how are they, what is their reason for being so livid regarding the incident?
When I got back on land and finally had internet, I saw the reactions of the public on social media. And there has been a lot of criticism against the government, the Defense Department, the Philippine military. People have been asking where they were at the time and why they did not respond to the situation. Now, the West Philippine Sea is such a vast sea area, and we do know that the capabilities of the armed forces are very limited. So they might not have been there because they could have been someplace else. But some government officials seem to be pinning those reactions on us as though we portrayed them to be inept and incapable of fulfilling their functions in the West Philippine Sea. We try our best to explain that this public perception is outside of my control. I can only control my story. I can only control my words and the footage that we have and the proof that we have. So I'm trying not to get too affected by this noise because we have footage.
I want to talk now about the reaction of General Cirilito Sobihana regarding the story, regarding the incident. How does that, also coupled with the latest statement of the task force, underscore not just the role of media, but also the relationship that government and media must have when it comes to the protection of national interest? Shara.
Well, from the start, General Sobihana he was apprised of the mission, the goal that I was setting out to do. Technically, we don't have to ask for permission from anyone to go out into the West Philippine Sea. But because I know the complications in that sea area, I gave General Sobihana a heads up. I told him what I was setting out to do, and I was in constant communication with him while I was out at sea and even shortly after the incident. General Sobihana understands the need for Filipinos to see what's out there, because for many Filipinos, the West Philippine Sea is such an abstract concept.
Yeah,
it's so hard to imagine if you live in the city. So that's why we journalists try our best to keep going out there and keep capturing visuals for people to understand what it is and what it matters to us, even if we're not from there. I can't say that our work as journalists should be used by the Philippine military to do their job, but I would say that, it both, I suppose, are complementary functions. We function to show people what's out there, and I suppose that it helps their purposes, that the people are aware of the situation and their moves in the West Philippine Sea. But he has been consistently grateful and supportive of not just of this particular coverage, but from any type of coverage for any of any Filipino journalist in the West Philippines.
Of course, the bigger picture here, Shara, is China and its continued presence in the West Philippine Sea. So finally, I want to talk about those other vessels, the vessels that were just repositioned in various spots still within the West Philippine Sea. Shara, in all your years of covering, what makes China so brazen in its actions in the West Philippine Sea? Clearly, they know these ships will be seen sooner or later, and yet there they were made. Shara.
Well, that's hard to answer from a personal perspective, but I have had the chance to speak with several maritime affairs experts about this, and they have said that because the Philippine government did take a friendlier stance on China instead of actively standing by or enforcing the victory in their arbitral tribunal, this kind of gave China more breathing room to move in the West Philippine Sea, knowing that they were now in the good graces of the Philippine government. So it's very, for the past few years, that has been the situation in the West Philippine Sea. I mean, yes, the Philippine government does file diplomatic protests with certain instances, but the clamor of the people for them to speak out against the swarming, the poaching, the pushing out the Philippine fishermen, essentially what they're doing now. People have been looking for that for the past 5 or so years. So I welcome these new strong pronouncements and these very adamant demands for China to pull out. And this is the first time that the Philippine government is doing this with such conviction publicly. So we've yet to see how China will respond to this.
All right, and we're going to have to leave it at that. Our correspondent Shara Zambrano joining us today. Thanks, Shara. And you take care and you keep safe.
Thank you.
All right, and from there, Manila's demand for Chinese ships to leave the West Philippine Sea should also be backed with the exercise of its rights in the country's exclusive economic zone. Congressman Rufy Biazon, Vice Chair of the House Committee on National Defense, says aside from filing diplomatic protests, maritime patrols should also be consistently conducted within our waters. He adds there is a possibility China might try to influence Philippine government decisions through investments and donations such as vaccines.
I see that as a possibility. That because of the donation of vaccines to the Philippines, China might try to influence decisions by the Philippine government, by the state, with regard to the issues on the West Philippine Sea. That's why when there was a talk about donations of vaccines going to the armed forces, I expressed my apprehension on that. Because we cannot set aside our concern about the West Philippine Sea. This goes into the future. The future generations of Filipinos would be affected if we make decisions there that do not assert and protect our sovereign rights.
A security analyst urging government to enact a national territorial defense framework to handle the crisis in the West Philippine Sea. Dr. Chester Cabalza believes this will coordinate the country's various national security and defense policies. He adds it will also ensure consistency in Manila's response, regardless of who becomes president after the 2022 elections.
Sometimes we befriend Beijing, and sometimes in terms of when it comes to crisis management, we ask, we seek help from Washington. So it's not pro Manila, definitely, in terms of how we handle this situation, because we are reacting so far based from what is happening in the West Philippine Sea. That is the rationale of having that kind of national territorial defense framework, because whoever sits in Malacanang after 2022 will have a vision of how to handle this crisis management in the West Philippine Sea.
The online pro-democracy movement Milk Tea Alliance, meanwhile, slammed the Philippine government for never discussing the West Philippine Sea issue systematically with Filipinos. The group says it was upon their own initiative to spread awareness about the issue.
For 5 years, the issue of the West Philippine Sea, its arbitration in The Hague, has never been discussed systematically So government never gave us the message that this award that we won is significant for us, and this is something that we can use. But it is not the end all and be all of the West Philippine Sea issue. So that's one frustration, and which is why we're trying to work overtime.
U.S. President Joe Biden sends an unofficial delegation to Taiwan to signal his personal commitment to the Chinese-claimed island and its democracy. A former U.S. senator and two former deputy secretaries of state are set to meet with senior Taiwanese officials. This is Washington's latest move to affirm relations with Taipei amid increased military activity by China around the self-ruled island. The U.S. State Department earlier said it was issuing new guidelines to enable U.S. officials to meet freely with Taiwan officials. The U.S. is required by law to provide the island with all means necessary to defend itself. But China is not backing down. It warned the U.S. to stop playing with fire over Taiwan as it lodged a complaint after the issuance of those guidelines. Another COVID-19 variant threatens the Philippines and the rest of the world. Initial reports say this new variant cannot be detected through a PCR test, considered the gold standard in COVID-19 testing. The variant was first reported in France in mid-March, and so far, it does not appear to be more dangerous or contagious. The Octa Research Group is urging the Philippine government to implement stricter measures for returning Filipinos due to this new threat.
Na dapat paghandaan natin, sinasabi na may mga bagong variants na hindi na detect ng PCR test. Ibig sabihin, kailangan ayos sila natin yung international travel protocols natin. Dapat pag may papasok ng mga returning Filipinos or mga tourists, dapat mandatory na yung quarantine period kasi hindi na detect ng PCR. And mas okay nga yun para kung mandatory quarantine period na 14 days for example or kahit mas mahaba pa, sigurado tayo na hindi sila makapaghawa ng ibang tao.
The Philippines recorded over 8,000 new coronavirus infections on Tuesday, bringing its total to nearly 885,000. The country has been reporting an average of more than 10,000 infections daily over the past week. The Philippines now has more than 165,000 active cases. That's the fifth highest since the virus reached the country. 137 new deaths were also reported, raising the death toll to more than 15,200. This is the fifth straight day that fatalities have surpassed 100. Nine laboratories failed to submit their data on time. New COVID-19 infections among health workers in the Philippines reached their highest weekly tally in the last 6 months. That's according to data from the Philippine Health Department, as analyzed by the ABS-CBN Investigative and Research Group. Last week, the Philippines logged 399 new COVID-19 cases among health workers, with nurses comprising almost half of that number. This brings the total COVID-19 case count in the sector to over 16,500. More than 600 of them are active. The Philippines also recorded four COVID-19 deaths among health workers last week after a month of no fatalities. The total number of COVID-19 deaths among health workers now stands at 86. COVID beds in Quezon Province nearing full capacity. It's already filled to up to 85%. Governor Danilo Suarez says even though isolation facilities still have rooms, they are bracing for a spike in coronavirus cases this week due to recorded cases of the UK variant. He adds some COVID patients from Metro Manila are referred to hospitals in their province.
May mga kamag-anakan dito dahil sa naubusan na ng bed capacity ang National Capital Region, marami na talaga kaming mga transient patient. Because I have 16 district hospital all over the province. And the biggest is in Quezon Medical Center. But I'm also speaking in behalf of the private hospitals. The private hospitals namin napupuno na rin.
The Philippines' COVID-19 treatment chief asks for two more weeks to improve the country's hospital referral system. The command center has been swamped with calls since March as it becomes increasingly difficult to find vacant hospitals, especially in Metro Manila. Health Undersecretary Leopoldo Vega says they will hire additional personnel and add more hotline numbers to accommodate more increase.
Give us 2 weeks pa after pa mapasok namin yung sapat na human resource at saka yung sapat na managed services ng PLDT. Babigyan kayo ng coordinated care, malalaman namin kung saan kayo pwedeng hospital mapapadala. Makokontakt namin yung mga hospitals na meron kaming referral na ganito, nangangailangan ng ICU o nangangailangan ng isang bed. At saka kung ano naman, kung hindi naman kayo nangangailangan ng hospitalization, mabibigyan kayo ng medical direction kung paano i-monitor ang sarili niyo kung nasa bahay lang kayo.
An infectious diseases specialist saying the COVID-19 surge in the Philippines could have been avoided had government acted 2 to 3 weeks earlier. Dr. Benjamin Koh points out data from as early as February shows there was already an uptick in the country's COVID-19 cases. At this point, Dr. Koh says government will have to triple the number of hospitals and intensive care units in the country. That's because the ongoing surge is 3 times worse than last year's spike in cases. He also calls for more empathy and compassion from the country's leaders.
If there is nothing left to give, then at least let us provide empathy and compassion to people in a crisis. They look up to a leader, and they would expect a little compassion and a little empathy, particularly those that are suffering in this situation. And it leaves a bad taste in the mouth when people spin the story a different way. And when I say spin the story in a different way, it looked more like to just show proof of life, you know, show somebody who is relaxing in a more relaxed state does not sit well with the majority of the Filipinos.
Less Filipino Muslims headed to the Golden Mosque in Manila's Quiapo Church as the second Ramadan during the COVID-19 pandemic begins. The mosque has a maximum capacity of 5,000 people, but less than 10% are allowed to enter at any time due to government restrictions.
Malaki ang pinagkaiba dahil dito sa barangay ko, pag yung mga nakaraan mga Ramadan before COVID, ang daming tao dito kasi ito parang sa mga kapatid natin Kristiyano, parang December to sa amin eh. Karamihan naman na mga kapatid natin Muslim, nag-cooperate sila, naintindihan nila yung sitwasyon natin ngayon, pandemya, alam nila na yung kalaban natin hindi natin nakikita.
Ramadan is the 9th month of the Islamic calendar and is considered one of Islam's holiest periods. We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, opposition lawmakers slam the slow pace in the distribution of the pandemic cash aid. We'll get the side of the Social Welfare Department when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with us here on ANC. Back. You're still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Beijing continues to defy Manila's demand for its ships to leave Philippine waters. A new COVID-19 variant said to be undetectable even with a gold standard in testing emerges in France. Party list group Bayan Muna hits government for the slow pace of its pandemic cash aid distribution. And the World Health Organization urges nations to stop the sale of live mammals in markets to prevent the spread of more infectious diseases. Back with more news, Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte has certified as urgent three measures that aim to boost the country's economic growth. The bills are seeking amendments to the country's Public Service Act, Retail Trade Liberalization Act, and Foreign Investments Act. Malacanang says the measures form part of Duterte's legislative reform agenda to spur economic growth by creating an attractive business climate in the Philippines and creating more jobs for Filipinos. In 2020, the Philippine economy shrank 9.5%, the worst contraction since the Second World War due to the pandemic. The country's economic managers see a 6.5 to 7.5% rebound this year. President Duterte did not, however, certify Bayanihan 3 as an urgent measure. Philippine Finance Chief Carlos Dominguez says his agency still has to work with lawmakers to find funds for the proposed third stimulus bill aimed at helping the economy recover from the pandemic. The bill calls for a 420 billion peso stimulus package. It will provide 1,000 pesos to each household member, regardless of their economic status. It also aims to provide a 1,000 peso allowance to each student and teacher and 8,000 pesos to displaced workers. But Dominguez says his agency and Congress must find a way to fund the measure without increasing the country's fiscal deficit. A party list group Abayan Muna slams President Rodrigo Duterte for the slow distribution of pandemic cash aid to residents within the NCR Plus bubble. Its chairman, Neri Colmenares, says based on figures from the Social Welfare Department, only 8% of the beneficiaries have received financial aid from the government. Colmenares adds many will go hungry because of COVID-19 lockdowns. The group also wants Duterte to account for the 2.5 trillion pesos government borrowed during the pandemic and raise the pandemic cash aid to 10,000 pesos per beneficiary. And let's get the reaction of the Social Welfare Department now. Joining us, DSWD spokesperson, Director Irene Dumlao. Director, good afternoon to you and welcome to the program.
Hi, I'm Carmina. Good afternoon.
All right, so let's cut to the chase here. How much have you disbursed so far?
Well, based on the report from the Department of Interior and Local Government as of April 13 at 11 a.m., around 2.2 million beneficiaries have already received their assistance, and that is equivalent to more than 2 billion pesos.
But why is it that, according to Congressman Zarate, by your own admission, only 8% of the 22.9 million beneficiaries have received financial aid from the government?
I think that report was based on the DILG report as of April 11. And based on the statistics that I've, or the figures that I have just mentioned, this is the most recent report that we have. This is as of 11 a.m. of April 13, wherein close to 10% of our target have already been accomplished.
But it's still low.
Well, we would like to explain and mention that the local government units are doing their best in distributing the assistance to their constituents. We understand that the local government units are also considering the situation and the peculiarities in their respective communities and are considering this in the implementation of the various strategies. Likewise, the members of the Joint Monitoring and Inspection Team, headed, of course, by the DILG, and whose representatives or members include the DSWD, the Philippine National Police, CSO partners from the GAUM, are monitoring and coordinating with the local government units to help or assist the LGUs distributing the assistance and ensuring that the needed aid will be distributed to our fellow Filipinos most in need.
Okay, but, you know, talk to us about the process here so that people may understand. How exactly do you disburse the money that's intended for the people? Map it out for us, please.
Okay. Foremost, the Department of Budget and Management downloaded the funds to the local government units on April 5 or 6, if I'm not mistaken. The Bureau of Treasury released the funds to the local government units. And prior to the distribution of the aid, the local government units are mandated to post the list of their identified beneficiaries on their website, social media accounts, and in conspicuous areas within their respective localities. Likewise, the local government unit is required as well to issue an executive order detailing the mode and the method of the distribution of assistance. In the executive order as well, it is indicated that a grievance and appeals committee is created by the local government unit to address grievances coming from their constituents. So after receipt of the notice of cash allocation, the local government units have already prepared for the distribution of assistance. In fact, in some LGUs, they started with the distribution April 6 or April 7. Mm-hmm. And based on the joint memorandum circular, they are given 15 days to distribute the aid upon receipt of the NCA if the assistance will be distributed in cash. And if the aid will be distributed in kind, the local government units are given 30 days to do so. So that is the process being undertaken by the local government units. On the part of the DSWD, we provided the local government units with the list of emergency subsidy beneficiaries. This list serves as a reference to the local government units in identifying and validating who their beneficiaries will be. Because of course, the local government units are most aware or most knowledgeable of the situation in the ground and are most knowledgeable on the conditions of their constituents or their beneficiaries.
Okay, but what about your surveillance mechanism? How are you able to ensure that the money intended for those affected really go to them?
Yes. In the joint memorandum circular, it stipulates that there will be a joint monitoring and inspection team in each municipality or city. It will be headed by the DILG municipal or city local legislative officer. The MLGOO or the CLGOO. And the members will include representatives from DSWD, the Philippine National Police, the city prosecutor's office, and members of the civil society organization in the ground. So this this committee or this team will monitor the implementation of the local government units and ensure that the distribution of the assistance will be made or will be conducted in the most efficient and effective manner. Likewise, the team will monitor that the local government units will follow the protocols and the provisions provided under the JMC. And the members are also required to maintain a hotline to receive grievances not resolved by the local government units. If you've noticed or if news have reached you, some officials of the DSWD and the DILG have been present in various payout activities to really ensure that the payout activities of the local government units follow the intended provisions or the processes as mandated under the JMC. And of course, the representatives from these various national government agencies are also there to provide assistance to the LGUs to ensure that the processes employed or adopted by the local government units are done to really address the interest of their constituents.
Yeah, but Director Dumlao, it's not just about the money reaching them, is it? You know, it's about the amount itself. And Bayan Muna Chairman Nery Colmenares had something to say about that. He said that what it's worth is that the aid itself is a measly 1,000 up to 4,000 a family, no matter the size. He says government can afford to give more to the people. Here's the question. If it can, then why aren't you giving it?
Well, based on the local budget circular issued, of course, by the DPM and the recommendation of our economic managers, this amount is the one that's downloaded to the local government units. But, of course, we appreciate the efforts and initiatives of some LGUs wherein over and above this financial assistance or this emergency assistance given to the beneficiaries. The LGUs are also providing additional assistance. It may be in the form of food packs, or I think some local government units are also providing additional financial assistance, especially to those not covered or not identified as belonging to the 80% population of the 80% low-income population. So apart from this, the DSWD is also implementing other social welfare services. We have our regular programs such as the assistance to individuals in crisis situation, the augmentation on the resources of the local government units, particularly on food packs. We also have our regular program, which is the Sustainable Livelihood Program, which aims to assist our fellow Filipinos who are in need of the appropriate interventions or assistance, especially during this period.
So let's get into that. I'm sorry, but we're running out of time, but I do want to get this in. Director Dumlao, let's get into that. I want to see and I want to hear from the DSW itself the interventions that are needed. Also, based on your assessment, in this time of lockdowns and layoffs, how much should affected families get in government aid? This is coming from the DSWD's perspective, and I want to hear it.
Well, Ma'am Carmina, as I've earlier mentioned, there are various programs and services of the department that we are implementing to augment the resources of the local government units, particularly during this time where the assistance for our fellow Filipinos in need, those who are vulnerable, are extended. And as I've earlier mentioned, we have the AIDS, we have the SLP, we have a resource augmentation, and these are provided to the local government units, to our clients and beneficiaries, upon assessment of the clients, of course, because...
So you feel, Director Dumlao, that whatever it is that government has been handing out, that's it, that is what is necessary, that is enough?
Come again, Ma'am Carmina.
Based on your assessment, whatever the aid, whatever form that is, that government has been handing out to affected families, based on the DSWD's assessment, it's enough. You're assessing it as enough, that it's just right?
Well, Ma'am Carmina, let me address it in this manner. What is important is the local government units and the national government agencies are helping each other to provide the necessary assistance for our fellow Filipinos in need, particularly during this period of time. So we see that if the LGUs and the NGAs collaborate and help each other, the best interest of our clients or our beneficiaries would be served.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. We appreciate you joining us today, the spokesperson of the DSWD, Irene Dumlao there. Thanks, and you keep safe.
Thank you very much. You keep safe too.
Right. On to more news. Even as government struggles to fund a much needed COVID stimulus package, we'll get this. It once again dumped crushed dolomite or artificial white sand along a portion of the Manila Bay Walk. This is part of a $389 million project of the Environment and Public Works Departments to rehabilitate the area. The dumping of dolomite sand, which began in September last year, drew heavy criticism. Many are questioning its necessity amid the pandemic. Environment and health advocates also cite the harmful effects of dolomite on the respiratory system as well as the base ecosystem. But government defended the project and insists the artificial white sand beautifies the area. U.S. federal agencies call for a temporary suspension of the use of Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 vaccine. This comes after reports of rare blood clots similar to those linked to AstraZeneca's jab. We have more in this report.
Johnson & Johnson's single-dose coronavirus vaccine was seen as a powerful tool to turn the tide in the global pandemic. But U.S. regulators on Tuesday called for a pause in the vaccine after six recipients developed a rare blood clot disorder. The New York Times reported one woman died and a second in Nebraska has been hospitalized in critical condition. All six recipients were women between 18 and 48 years of age.
I know there are people who have gotten the vaccine who are probably very concerned. For people who got the vaccine more than a month ago, the risk to them is very low at this time. For people who recently got the vaccine within the last couple weeks, they should be aware to look for any symptoms. If you've received the vaccine and developed severe headache, abdominal pain, leg pain, or shortness of breath, you should contact your healthcare provider and seek medical treatment. Now, these symptoms are different from the mild flu-like symptoms, fever, and so forth, that many people experience in the couple days after receipt of the vaccine.
The agency said an advisory committee to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention will meet on Wednesday to review the cases, and the Food and Drug Administration will review the analysis. Both agencies said the adverse events appear to be extremely rare.
We're recommending this pause while we work together to fully understand these events, and also so we can get information out to healthcare providers and vaccine recipients.
J&J said it is working closely with regulators. The drug maker said no clear causal relationship had been established between the events and its vaccine. More than 6 million doses of Johnson & Johnson's one-shot vaccine have been administered in the U.S. The news sent J&J shares down in early trading Wednesday. The agency's move comes 1 week after European regulators said they found a possible link between AstraZeneca's vaccine and a rare blood clotting problem that had led to a small number of deaths. And just 4 days ago, the European Medicines Agency said it was reviewing rare blood clots in four people in the U.S. who had received J&J's vaccine.
U.S. President Joe Biden confident the pause in the use of Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 jab will not significantly impact the country's vaccination program. Biden points out there are as many as 600 million doses of Pfizer and Moderna's vaccines available to Americans. The White House also says there are enough vaccines to continue the current pace of about 3 million shots per day to meet Biden's goal of 200 million shots by his first 100 days in office. The Philippine Food and Drug Administration expected to release new guidelines on the use of AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccines this week. That's amid reports of blood clots linked to the shots. FDA Director General Eric Domingo says they have already been advised by the WHO and vaccine experts on the matter. Domingo notes there is still a consensus. The benefits of the AstraZeneca vaccine outweigh the risks.
Maglalabas lang po tayo ng guidelines kung ano sa ating mga, lalo dito sa mga magbabakuna, para ma-advise nila yung babakunahan kung ano yung mga symptoms to watch out for, at para alam din po ng mga pasyente kung ano may nararamdaman sila, kung kailan sila kailangan konsulta for this very rare na possible occurrence po of blood clotting.
FDA is also reviewing reports of rare blood clots linked to the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccines as part of its evaluation into J&J's emergency use application in the Philippines. contest sports action. Before we go, the Denver Nuggets NBA title chase just took a sucker punch. The Nuggets will likely have to play the rest of the season minus their high-scoring guard, Jamal Murray. That's after Murray was diagnosed with a torn ACL on his left knee. Murray suffered the injury in the closing seconds of their recent loss to the Golden State Warriors. Murray was the Nuggets' second leading scorer and best shot maker. He got national attention in last season's playoffs, where he averaged over 26 points per game and nearly helped the Nuggets reach the NBA Finals. The Los Angeles Clippers notched their sixth straight win with a 126-115 victory against the Indiana Pacers. Clippers wingman Paul George exploded for 36 points against his former team. He hasn't lost in four games against the Pacers since they traded him to Oklahoma City in 2017. The Clippers improved to 38-18, while the Pacers slipped to 25-28. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcast. Play back this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.